You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
The United States alone holds over 45% of the global pharmaceutical market. And in 2016, this share was valued around $446 billion. Now, almost $60 billion U.S. dollars are spent annually on pharmaceutical R&D, research and development purposes in the U.S. The cost for developing a new drug has been increased dramatically over the last decades. From, it used to be about under $200 million, you know, per type of development of each new drug, and now it's over $2.6 billion. So how about, though, how much it costs to do research on long-term effects of these drugs? Is it being done? You know, I pursued the internet looking for these stats and couldn't find it at all. But I'm hoping that our guest today will be able to shed some light in that area. Suzanne Robati is the founder of MedShadow Foundation and is here to share 7 questions that all women should ask about their meds. Thanks for being here on Wellness for Life, Sue.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Suzanne. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Now, before we jump right into these 7 questions that we all should ask, women should ask our doctors and even pharmacists, how did you get interested in patient advocacy and why did you start the MedShadow Foundation?
Well, I took guardianship of my nephew when he was 12 years old. My husband and I did not have our own children, and he has lived with us now for the past 10 years. But when he came to us, the school that we sent him to said, oh, he's totally ADHD. You must put him on Ritalin. And I took him to a doctor who said, oh, he's totally ADHD, and here's a prescription for Ritalin, and don't worry, if that doesn't work, we'll double the dosage, and if that doesn't work, we'll give him Adderall, and if that doesn't work, we'll give him Wellbutrin. We can get this under control. And I looked at him, and I said, he's 12, his brain is developing, he's hitting puberty, and he's just moved to a new family that he doesn't know well, and we are terrible parents because we don't know what we're doing. Aren't there other measures we should be taking before giving him medicine? And the doctor said, no, this will work great, and it's much faster. And I said, well, what are the long-term effects on a developing brain and a, you know, puberty and all that stuff? And he said, oh, there's no effects. I've been giving this stuff out for 20 years. I would know. So I looked up studies, and there are none. There were none at the time. There were no studies on the effect of Ritalin or Adderall or Wellbutrin on teenage boys that went longer than 300 days. That is not a long-term study. And there still, to my knowledge, are no studies that go as long as a year to see what the effect is on these kids. And we know there are side effects. So this is why I started MedShadow. We are all about, what are the side effects? What are you risking to get the benefit of that drug? Obviously, I never put my kid on Ritalin, and we were lucky because he didn't ever actually truly need it. He needed time. He needed attention. He needed a lot of coaching and some therapy, and he's a great adult today, 10 years later. Some kids do need these drugs, but you need to know what you're risking before you take them. And that's what MedShadow is about.
Well, it's awesome that you started this, because you know what? The pharmaceutical industry is not going to stop. And quite frankly, they're just going to continue with new drugs, but having that advocacy on what happens afterwards. That's super important. I know there are many, many pharmaceutical drugs out there also that they were taken off, the shelf because they caused a lot of conditions, diseases, outcomes that they didn't know it was going to cause until more and more people started taking it. You know, I have a patient right now who's on a drug that she's in her 80s now, but she's been taking this drug for acid reflux for at least 20 years, and now she's got kidney disease from it. They do know this, though. The doctors do know it. It's been researched, but they did not tell her that this is what's going to be, that you might actually get kidney disease if you take this long term. And sure enough, she's got it now, and she's got to deal with that. If the doctor would have been able to say, hey, this may happen, she might have had a choice. I don't want to take this, doctor. And what you're doing is you're giving it out to the responsibility to the patients, the people out there saying they need to go and ask the right questions, right?
Well, we're trying to give them the tools. It should be a shared decision-making process. And by shared, ultimately it is you, you're the I hate to say patient. We're not all patients. But it's the person's decision. The doctor should be the person giving you the information, making suggestions, helping you think through it. And that's the sharing part. It's ultimately, it is your decision. So you need the tools. You need to ask the questions. And that's, we're here to give you questions so you can get
right.
the right answers.
Well, we've got that 7 questions, and I'd like to ask you, what's the first question that we all should ask?
Well, the first question is, what is the lowest effective dose? And the reason is because there's an average dose that's recommended for most drugs. But every human body is different, and your body may metabolize things more slowly or more quickly, and you might need less or more than the average amount of dosage. And why should we care about that? Because the higher dose of drug that you take, you're more likely to get the side effects. The benefit of a drug might be that it stops heartburn, but it might make you sleepy. And I'm just combining two odd things. But if you take too much of it, you'll be asleep all the time, and that's not effective. You want the lowest dose that will help you with the problem you've got today, but not cause you side effects. Let me just say, Dr. Suzanne, every year, 4 million Americans are rushed to the emergency room because of their negative reaction to a drug that was prescribed to them, a drug that they probably did not know could harm them more than it can help them. So that's why you don't want to take more of a drug than you have to. It stresses your kidneys and livers. Just ask, let's start slow, and we can add to it if it's not being effective.
You know, you just reminded me of a patient this week that we had is a 100-pound young boy who had a sinus infection. The doctor gave him a full dose of an antibiotic for an adult. And I kept on stressing to the patient's mother, you know, because I take care of this child for his allergies and other issues. I said, listen, this might be an adult dose, but your child is not an adult weight. So please go to the pharmacist and talk to them. Please talk to the doctors. She was reluctant because she wasn't sure what to do. You know, she doesn't want to prevent the child from getting well if she changed the dose. But of course, we all knew because he had a great deal of digestive issues because of the full adult dose. So finally, she did go talk to the doctor, the pharmacist, and they've cut down the dose, which is so much better. So what you're saying is so correct regarding the lowest effective dose. And that's something that pharmacists don't tell you. Doctors don't even know.
Right. Well, most doctors only have 15 to 18 minutes to spend in getting your background history, what your family life is like, and making a diagnosis, and then choosing a drug. That's a lot to do in 15 to 18 minutes.
That's right. So then what's the next question that we need to ask about a medication?
Can this medicine cause dependency or a rebound effect? And there we're combining actually two questions. A dependency, meaning can my body become dependent on this drug? For example, PPIs, heartburn drugs, are the perfect example for both dependency and rebound effect. So after you've taken a PPI for as short as 2 to 3 days, your body starts becoming dependent on the anti-heartburn properties of that drug and stops taking care of heartburn on its own. So you're now dependent on that drug without particularly realizing it. But you do find that out when you stop taking it. Because if you stop taking it and you've been taking it for a week or two, you're going to find your heartburn is worse than it ever was. That's the rebound effect. When a symptom that was either absent or it was under control while you're taking a medicine, but then appears even more strongly when the medicine is stopped, that's rebound. And you've only got two choices then. You can go on that drug for the rest of your life, or you can gut it out. You can just tough it out for a few days until your body says, oh, that's my job. Okay, I guess I'll do that now.
Just for the fact that you get a rebound effect, that just tells you, why would I want to do this one? You know? There's one that's very commonly used. It's the one that it's a nasal spray. to help you with runny nose and congestion when you have a cold or when you have allergies. And so often they use these nasal sprays because it's so quick. It helps so immediately. And there's such relief. But afterwards, it just ends up creating such a huge rebound. And the opposite, that it's not worth it. It's not worth using that drug. Got to find some other options.
You have to be very careful about how you do it. Those nasal sprays are very addictive. I started using a saline nasal spray just earlier because it's very dry in my apartment. Earlier meaning 2 weeks ago. I had to throw the bottle away today. I'm so wanting that saline nasal spray. And there's no medicine in it. You know,
right.
It's just
right.
You need to be aware of how your body is responding to what you're doing to it. And I don't want to be dependent on any outside, except food and water. I don't want to be dependent on other things. So
I'm right there with you. You know, being natural and working with the nature is the best. What is the next question that we really need to ask?
Well, there's actually one more part of question two. Can this cause dependency or rebound effect? One key question that I didn't phrase it this way, but you should or could ask is, can I stop this drug without titrating down, without cutting back first? And that's a clue to you. If the doctor says, no, when you're done taking this drug, you need to go off of it gently and cut back, that's a drug you want to think twice about starting. If you can avoid it, that may not be a drug that you want to start, because that's a dependency. Even though the doctor says it's not addictive, but if you have to step down off a drug, that means it's creating a dependency.
That's commonly seen with, let's say, you know, antidepressant drugs. Those are drugs that a lot of my patients, they start to feel better. We get them feeling physically better. They're able to work without having any emotional upsets and stress levels they can handle. And a lot of my patients, they want to get off of those drugs. And the first thing I tell them is you got to ask your doctor. Ask your doctor, how can you wean off of this? And how fast can you wean off of it? Or how slow do you need to take it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. So, which leads right into the next question, which is, what is the shortest amount of time I need to be on this drug? And do I have to wean myself off of it? I guess I did add that to the next question. I was smarter than I thought I was. But the shortest amount, you want to be on a drug for the shortest amount of time. Listen, I avoid medicines as much as I can. Basically, I'm a healthy person, and I find it hard to believe that taking a medicine when I feel good and healthy and strong, any medicine is going to make me feel better than that. So I do avoid it. But there are times when I do need medicines, and I use myself as an example because I don't want to project onto other people. But there are times when I need medicines, and there's times when everyone's going to need medicine, particularly as we get older. You take more medicines in the last 10 years of your life than you probably take, and I'm generalizing here, but that you'll probably take your whole life combined. So medicines are very hard on your liver and your kidney, as you pointed out at the beginning of the show, Dr. Suzanne. And the fewer medicines you take in your lifetime, the more effective they can be as you get older and when you really don't have alternatives and you actually need them. So that's why I circle back to, I want to be on the lowest dosage for the shortest amount of time possible so that I'm not stressing my kidneys or stressing my liver and I stay healthy and not dependent.
Great. Very good. You know, many of my patients, they do come in with different, and as we get older, the older the patient is, the more drugs they bring in to my office. I don't prescribe drugs in my practice, so I don't touch them at all, meaning like I don't tell them what they need to do with the drugs. What we do is I advise the patient, and so that they can communicate with the doctors and the pharmacist, what other possibilities can we have here? The reason why I say talk about this, about drugs, and why I want to know more about the drugs is because they may have drug interactions. They may have, these drugs can give different types of side effects. A lot of us don't go into looking at the side effects and finding it online. You can find every drug, and every drug's side effect is online. So do the research. I ask people to do their research. Don't you agree on that? Isn't that one of your questions too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's a very big movement today in medicine called deprescribing. And that is every once in a while, every time you go to the doctor's office for a checkup or for anything, take everything that you are taking, every medicine, every supplement, every over-the-counter drug, put in a brown paper bag, walk into the doctor's office and say, this is what I'm taking. What can I stop taking? Because there's a habit that doctors get into. They make a prescription for, I don't know, a statin when you're 48 years old. And somehow when you're 72, you're still taking that statin because nobody ever told you, oh, no, 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 your numbers are fine now. You don't need to take that statin anymore. De-prescribing, double-checking and making sure you still need that prescription. It goes right to what's the shortest amount of time. You know, you want to know when your end date is on that drug. Don't take it forever if you can avoid it.
Such a great point, too. And I've also found that a lot of the symptoms that the patient is coming in for to see me to help, they want my help to get rid of those symptoms, are actually due to drug reactions, the side effects. Some people come in with this dry mouth, dry eyes, and a lot of the drugs that they're on is causing it. Some people have other problems like urination issues or bowel movement issues. They've got constipation, and it's caused by the drugs. So this is super important.
Constipation is a side effect of so many drugs, unbelievably amount of drugs. So the more you can stay off the drugs, the more your body can take care of itself and do what it's supposed to do, as in go when it's supposed to go. So another thing which is very important for women, what are the potential side effects? You should always ask about that, but particularly pay attention to weight gain, low libido, liver and kidney problems, which again, you touched on earlier. But, you know, things like NSAIDs and PPIs, NSAIDs, of course, you know, like ibuprofen and aspirin and PPIs for heartburn, diuretics and laxatives, very hard on your kidney. So it should be used very sparingly. And there's a lot of women who a doctor will prescribe an antidepressant to, and the antidepressants classically cause weight gain. And honestly, you know, I don't want to cause body issues out there, but for a lot of women, gaining weight in an unexplained way, you don't know why, is not going to help you when you're depressed. It's going to make you feel worse.
That is absolutely true. I mean, there's no doubt. And obviously, if a drug can have an effect on the metabolic energy and your ability to expend energy, there's something there that you gotta look at. Well, you know, we talk about women and what women need to ask, but how about pregnant women? Pregnant women out there, they're a special group. So are there questions for that?
There are special questions for that. Just to tell the doctor that you're planning on getting pregnant or that you are pregnant or that you just had a child and you're lactating, you're breastfeeding, very important. You know, 50% of all pregnancies are unplanned. So a lot of times, a woman will be taking medicines during the first couple of months of her pregnancy and not even know that she's pregnant. So exposure, fetuses, exposure to pregnancy, it happens. But so that's why if you're fertile, if you are thinking about getting pregnant or might get pregnant because you're sexually active and no birth control is 100% protective, you may want to take that into account. Look for alternative medicine and look for complementary therapy rather than taking medicines whose effects aren't known on a fetus, a developing fetus. Particularly avoid sleeping pills, avoid opioids. And those PPIs, those heartburn pills, they're the bad guys. I was just at the FDA on Monday and Tuesday this week because I'm a member of an advisory council for the Food and Drug Administration on pregnancy lactation labels. That's the information that a doctor gets on a drug. And one thing that I learned was how many drugs there are whose effect on pregnant and breastfeeding women are completely unknown or the studies are weak and unclear. Pregnant women are not included in trials for drugs for many reasons. And you can understand the ethics of including a pregnant woman. But what it means is that drugs that are prescribed to pregnant women are usually not well tested on it. So you have to be asking your doctor and being very clear, I'm pregnant. Is this going to affect the fetus? And sometimes the answer is, we don't know. Or sometimes the answer is, maybe a little. There's a little bit of increase. Maybe there's not. But one of the things that was stressed over and over again is the mother has to remain healthy to have a viable pregnancy. If she has uncontrolled asthma, well, that's going to harm the baby more than probably the medicine for controlling that asthma. Or maybe there are better ways you, Dr. Suzanne, can suggest for controlling that asthma. If she has depression, that's potentially going to harm that baby a lot more than certain medicines that have been tested for depression in pregnancy. So when you talk to your doctor about when you're pregnant and taking a medicine, you want to know what is the baseline risk of any harm to my child. For example, I think it's 3% of all children born in America will have some sort of congenital anomaly, some sort of birth defect, even if everything was perfect, no history, nothing, 3%. So if this drug is going to double your risk, it's still only 6%. How important is this medicine to your health and survival? If it's not, stop taking it. Don't take Accutane if you're pregnant or going to get pregnant or anywhere near pregnancy. For example, it's too high a risk and there's too little benefit to it. But if it's an antidepressant drug and it's the only thing that's been able to keep you from being suicidal, then you have to live first. And, you know, you'll manage if there's a defect. Hopefully it'll be a small one.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Sue. You know, we've got two more questions that I want you to share. The one is about alcohol and other meds exaggerating or blocking the medication's effect. That's one question that you need to ask. Is that right?
Yes. And you can kind of figure this out almost on your own because the side effects will tell you. If the doctor tells you this drug will probably make you a little bit sleepy, if you drink alcohol on that drug, and the doctor should probably tell you not to drink alcohol on it, but you know alcohol makes you sleepy. So if you're taking a drug that makes you sleepy, meaning it depresses your system so that it makes you tired and sleepy, alcohol does the same thing. And that's when you get into significant problems with your system becoming too depressed and your heart could slow down and you could stop breathing in a very extreme case. That would be bad. If the medicine makes you a little hyper, then you're going to want to make sure that you avoid lots of sugar. If the medicine's going to make you, steroids make you hungry, so hungry. I took steroids at one point and I unashamedly ate 3 sandwiches in a row.
Wow.
You don't want to, I know that steroids are very powerful and it was a long time ago and it was probably not a great diagnosis, but I did. So whatever the medicine does, alcohol and others and the foods you eat and the way you live your life can exaggerate it. So don't increase the side effects by the other things that you're doing.
Great. And then we got one last question, question number seven. What is that one?
Well, this one's where you are probably the most helpful person in town. It is, should I and can I simply make lifestyle changes or consider alternative therapies instead of taking this medicine? And here you can probably answer better than I can why it's so important to diet, exercise, yoga, eat more slowly, meditate, spend time with your family, get a dog, get a cat, take your dog for a walk. There are so many things you can do to make yourself happy and keep your life whole and well. Wouldn't you say so?
Oh, absolutely, Sue. There's no doubt because if you do implement healthy lifestyle changes, then you may really not need that drug at all. And in the future, not even worry about needing to have those drugs because changes in foods and getting rid of the food allergies will get rid of the reflux that, you know, you will never need to deal with that. You know, if you've had more exercise and you slept well, headaches might not occur. So you don't need those headache medications. If you address your internal environment and external environment, it will reduce any of that inflammation in your lungs so that you might not need asthmatic protocols and asthma medications. There's so many things that we can do. You're absolutely right, Sue. And, you know, your questions are just so important that everyone needs to know. I think that we talked about seven questions that women need to know, but I think it's for all women and men. Because the men, when it comes to the pregnancy, you want to be concerned about your pregnant wife or your partner and the, you know, your future children. So I think this is for all people, don't you think?
I do. And let me tell your listeners that if you go to our website, which is medshadow.org, you can download this these 7 questions for free. You can also Google any of these questions you have, or Google questions about the medicine your doctor is suggesting that you take, to find out more about what the side effects are, how to avoid it, what are the alternatives to that medicine, and also if you really do need to take that medicine, how do you deal with those side effects so that they don't ruin or control your life. So I hope you do go to our website and check out medshadow.org.
Oh, thank you so much. Again, that website is called Med, and that's M-E-D, shadow.org. Thanks so much, Sue. Now, just so that I want to recap for the people out there, the 7 questions that you want to ask. What is the, number one, what is the lowest effective dose of this medication? Number two, can this cause dependency or a rebound effect? Number three, what is the shortest amount of time I need to be on this drug? And do I have to wean myself off of it? Number four, what are the potential side effects, such as weight gain, low libido, liver or kidney problems? Number five, what if I'm planning to get pregnant or have an unplanned pregnancy? How will this medication affect me? And number six, will alcohol or other meds exaggerate or block this medication's effect? And the last one, should I make lifestyle changes or consider alternative therapies? To me, that one comes first, always. But thank you so much, Sue. Thank you so much. Again, it's medshadow.org. I so appreciate all of you for being part of the Wellness for Life community. And if you've enjoyed this show, please go to iTunes and give us a raving review. Don't forget to connect with me on Instagram and Facebook. And if you need help with any personal health issues, I work with many, many people all around the world on the phone, as well as on FaceTime and Skype. So just give me my office a call at 310-315-1514 or email my assistant at help@drsuzanne.com. And you can also get more information from my website, drsuzanne.com. Until next time, go out there and live your best life today, full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate health and wellness. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.